time, 10 ago. So we are reading on this topic of Vivikta Desha Sevitvam Arthur Jana Samsadhi. So they both are related topics, so we will discuss them together. So aspiring to live in a solitary place, he is saying, and detachment from the general mass of people. A devotee generally, see, we can talk from the point of view of a Vedic follower who is a jnani or a yogi, and also we can talk from the point of view of a devotee. Generally, any spiritual aspirant, he likes to live in a solitary place, and we discussed about it in one of the previous classes. As Prabhupada says, the forest is in the mode of goodness, and the city is in the mode of passion, and liquor shop is in the mode of ignorance. Prabhupada says, the forest of the countryside is in the mode of goodness. So the mode of goodness is very conducive for spiritual progress. You will find people have a natural attraction to live, like people go to Lonavala, isn't it? It's a lush green forest and there are waterfalls, and when you are in nature, you feel very natural, that's why you call it nature. You feel very soothing feeling. So the mode of goodness is very conducive for spiritual progress. So one of the reasons why people would go to the solitary place is to abstain from material sound vibration and material association. Like for example, the city or the town, it is filled with material sound vibration. Like you find all the material sounds. It's not only in the modern times, even in the ancient times. Like the kings will be living, there will be talk about the politics, political situation of the kingdom. There will be talk about man and woman. There will be talk about socializing, parties, people. So naturally, in an atmosphere where there is always talk going about the material world, one becomes completely soaked in material consciousness. So the Vedas make this point very emphatically, that depending on which kind of atmosphere you soak yourself in, that will gradually sink into your consciousness. So if you are in material atmosphere, surrounded by material atmosphere, it's only a matter of time. Gradually, you will be soaked into it. Just like see the children in America now. They have 125 channels they have. And they say in a day, they are saying, there must be around 15,000 violent scenes in all these channels in one day. Of course, I don't think anybody is going to see all the channels in a day. But still, there are so many violent scenes being shown. And if these children are constantly soaked in such atmosphere, it just gets into their brain. And they get completely brainwashed by it. They get soaked into it. Naturally, if they are shooting teachers or other children, or they become big criminals, one should not be surprised. So that's very natural. So, like we say, you become what you associate with. We say, so any spiritualist would prefer avoiding any material association that leads him to forget Krishna, forget God, and get soaked in the temporary goals of material life. So the world constantly emphasizes on temporary goals. You will see that. Everyone emphasizes on temporary goals. What about the immediate problems? People are all into immediate problems. So there is no encouragement for the spiritual emancipation from the people around you. You will see that. Generally, what to speak of the material world, even you will find your mother, father, husband, wife, children, family members who don't know about spirituality. You will see that there is a constant tug of war going on between you and them. So they always try to emphasize on material goals. While the sadhus and saintly people and the shastras, they emphasize on shreyas. Shreyas and prayas. Prayas is actually immediate goal. Shreyas is long-term goal. So there is always from the materialistic side you will find there is always emphasis on immediate goals. They will say, spiritual life is always there. Where does it go? You can always practice it, you know. But right now we need money. Right now you need a house. Right now you need a car. Right now you have to, you know, get this daughter married or put the son in the job. There are immediate responsibilities which are constantly being emphasized by people around you. And all people will talk about economic development only in the material world. How to, even if you do dharma, they will say do dharma only for economic development, not for otherwise. Dharma should be performed only for artha. You go to some sadhu who can help you to get money in lottery, or you go to somebody who can, you know, help you become better. And many people very frankly ask nowadays. They come and ask, can you help me, you know, to get good marks? Can you help me to get a big job? Can you give me ashirvad? Many people seek ashirvad. So material world is filled with people who only think of material things immediately. So if one is going to live in their company, then naturally one finds a very awkward situation to make spiritual progress. So even in the Vedic times you will find, like, you know, when Prachetas were told to get married and beget children, you know what they did? Immediately they went into the woods. You'll find. The Vedic times you'll always find that. If anybody has to get some power or shakti, where will they go? Immediately to forest. Solitary place. Innumerable examples we can give for this. Even to the extent of Hiranyakashipu or somebody to get powers. Why people go into the woods? To a solitary place. Because in a solitary place, one can completely be focused on one's goal without any distraction. Like one of the aspects of Ashtanga Yoga is Pratyahara. Pratyahara means, ahar is food, prati means against. Pratyahara means shutting off all the senses and not feeding them gratification, by which gradually the senses come under control. That's the meaning of Pratyahara. Actually, the more you feed your senses, the more they demand. And the more they demand, the more you feed, and there is no end only to that procedure, process. So, understanding this, one practices restraint. That restraint increases willpower. The willpower can operate determination. The determination can help you to get Dhrida Sankalpa. See, all are related. What is the first one I said? Like, you know, if you restrain the senses from worldly activities, like Prabhupada is saying, cinema going, or, you know, party, and socializing, and parties and everything, constantly thinking of the material body. And in parties, if you see, most often people come, everyone wants to show what dress I am wearing to the world. I am wearing the costliest dress, isn't it? Shake hands with everyone. See my dress, you see your dress. I scratch your back, you scratch my back. Isn't it? Actually, maybe a decade ago, you know, they would be showing each other's jewellery. Nowadays, there is not much jewellery to show. Thieves are around everywhere. So you cannot show gold and silver. So now people wear dress and show. So basically, parties and socializing gatherings are basically meant for impressing one another. The whole world, I was hearing from one very senior devotee, he was speaking. He was telling a very interesting point. People in this world are attracted to the skin of others. He was telling how the attraction for the skin, like Indians are attracted to fair skin, Americans are attracted to black skin. So they are attracted to skin. So he said this world is full of chamars, he was telling. You know chamar? Chamar means a cobbler, he was telling. So everyone is in a move of impressing one another. Everyone tries to impress one another, and everyone wants to. So everyone is on an ego trip in this world. That's the material world made up of. And all the shows that go on are for this. So in such an atmosphere, for one to practice spiritual life can be a big challenge. Because what is spiritual life all about? Spiritual life is, first thing in spiritual life is to give up false ego. Isn't it? As he says, amanitvam, adambitvam. So that's how it begins, the process of knowledge. So spiritual life, you are told that you are not the master, you are the servant. That's how it begins. So you will find a diametrically opposite type of nature between spiritualists and materialists. Even in Bhagavad Gita it is like, Janisha Sarva Bhutanam, Tasyam Jagrati Samyami, Tasyam Jagrati Bhutani, Svanisha Pishatomune. It is said that, you know, daytime for spiritualists is nighttime for the materialists, because they just can't understand what the spiritualists are doing. Everything that a spiritualist does is bewildering to the materialist, isn't it? Because when Gaurampa was coming, he was joking, he was telling, the materialists wonder, you know, if you shave up, you can shave up the whole head, why do you keep a ponytail? You know, they wonder like that. And he was telling, you know, if you are wearing dhoti, wear dhoti, why this is hanging in the front? So he was telling our spiritualists that the way they dress, the way they speak, you put a tilak and there is a tail to the tilak also. You wonder, what is this? So in America, it's even more strange for them. You see, what is this? Some kind of paste you put on there. Oh, hell. India, at least it's known. And these are superficial external things, but the very nature of a spiritualist is bewildering to a materialist. How this person can be just, you know, chanting the name of God for so long, reading scriptures, and how can one not enjoy? In America, for example, when Dallas Gurukul was started, some women, they took ISKCON to the court, saying that they are torturing the children, because children have to get up early in the morning, and children have to, you know, they have to come in front of some dolls and they have to dance, and they have to shout some slogans loudly, you know. So they were thinking that it is a big torture, but for devotees, every day is a festival. Every day is like Diwali. Every morning you get up, you chant, you dance. It's a life of ecstasy. But for materialistic people, it's a strange thing. They will say, how can you get up so early in the morning? We should be getting up at 8 o'clock. So that is why he says in this verse, Jani Shasaro Bhutana Pasyam Jagarta Sangani. What is night for the materialist is day for the spiritualist. What is night for the materialist is day for, like that it's reverse, opposite. So it's like oil and water. It just cannot mix. It doesn't get along together. So naturally, those who are spiritualists, as he says, Vivikta Desha Sevitvam, they would like to go to a secluded place, he says, as Krishna says. So like you heard of people going to Himalayas. But you will find Prahlad Maharaj in Srimad Bhagavatam condemning those who go to such secluded places. So now, we were just now talking that spiritualists go to secluded place, like this. But Prahlad Maharaj condemns them. Why? He says, people who only think of their own selfish emancipation or liberation, they only go to secluded place. So Prahlad Maharaj, in one of the verses, he says, what is that verse? Prayena deva munayasva vimukti kaman Maunam charanti bijanena pararta nishtha naitan vihaya kripananya mumuksha eko nanyam tvadasya sharanam brahmatonu pashye. He is saying, my dear Lord, prayena deva munayaha sva vimukti kaman. Sva vimukti means their own liberation. Keeping the ultimate goal as their own liberation, there are many rishis and munis who head towards the forest. They go into Maunam Charanti. They follow Maunavrat. Do you know why they follow Maunavrat? Because even by speaking, sometimes we become entangled. By opening our mouth. Because we may speak something improper. Or sometimes, by talking to someone, we may strike a relation, and then this way it may develop more and more, and one may get entangled. So, there are many people who follow the Maunavrat. By silence, you gain strength also, right? Internal strength. Of course, this is the path of the jnanis and yogis that is being explained, that one should keep silent, one should keep mown, and maunam charanti vijane na parartanishtha. Vijane means enter into the forest, na parartanishtha. They do not worry about the welfare of the general mass of people. They head towards the forest, thinking about their own welfare, he says. And then Prahlad says, my dear Lord, I don't want to be like them, he says. I don't want to go to Vivikta Desh, solitary place. I want to be in the company of, he says, fools and rascals, he says, people who are gratifying their senses. I want to chase behind them and teach them, preach them and purify them and bring them back to Vaikuntha. He says, Naitan Vihaya Kripanan Vimamuksha Yeko. I don't want to go alone to Vaikuntha, he says. I want to carry all the people of the world to Vaikuntha. So this is the mood of our great devotee Prahlad. So here we come to understand one very important point, the essential difference between a Vaishnava devotee on one hand and the jnanis and yogis on the other. So this topic has to be discussed by clearly distinguishing the mood of a Vaishnava and the mood of jnanis and yogis. You see, jnanis and yogis have to go to solitary place for two reasons. One reason is, if they are surrounded by sense objects and if they are surrounded by the worldly sound vibrations, they get affected by it. Why? Because their slogan is, they want to give up all name, form, and they want to forget about all the activities. They want to remain inactive. Can they remain inactive in a society, in the middle of society? So there will be a lot of distraction for them. So one reason they go to forest is to avoid all distractions. Another reason they go to forest is also explained. It is explained by Avadhut Brahman in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. There is a very beautiful story there. Once a girl who was in a marriageable age, she was at home and her parents had gone out somewhere for some work. At that time suddenly the boy and the boy's parents, they all came, you know, to see the girl. So now the girl was very feeling uneasy because they belonged to a poor house. So she was thinking that if they come to know that I am poor, no, nobody will marry a girl who comes from such a poor family. So she thought what to do. So she was supposed to cook something for them. You know, she was supposed, you know, they make rice by beating, what do you call it? Sutra, is it? Yeah. So she was supposed to beat the rice with her hand. And she was having actually a few bangles in her hand and she was making sound. So she thought that if I remove the bangles, you know, then they won't make sound. They won't come to know that I am, you know, making this kind of rice. Because that rice is not eaten by the elite class. It's only eaten by very poor people. So keeping that in mind, one set of bangles she removed. And when she was beating, again some more bangles were, you know, hitting with one another. And again she removed one more pair. At last she found that, you know, only when there was one bangle in the hand, then only it didn't make sound. And then she thought, now I can do the work and cook for them. So Avadhut Brahman tells this example that from this story, what we can understand, he gets a great lesson. He says, as soon as two people come, there will be useless talk. He says, that's why the single bangle was there in her hand. It wasn't making any sound. As soon as two people come, there will be some useless talk. Say, one wants to study scriptures, then one has to be alone. That conclusion he says. Like in a train also he finds, as soon as some people come together, they talk about politics, they talk about economical situation of the country, they talk about technological advancement of America, Japan and India, they compare, when will India become a superpower nation? They're talking about the rain, and they're talking about the climatic conditions. They're talking about how to escape from income tax. They're talking about where to invest the money, where you can multiply money very fastly. In one place, if you put money, in 4 years you get double. Another place, in 2 years only you get double. Only problem is it may go Diwala. So they're talking about money matters. Or they're talking about caste. These caste people are more intelligent. You know, those who have this surname, they are very intelligent people. Because they have the surname. They keep talking about caste, they keep talking about nation. You see, all this goes on. In train, if you see, are they playing cards? You see them. So generally, you will see that people talk about money matters or marriage. These are very common talks. Money and marriage, very, very common talks. So, like, you know, I sometimes go in the train to read, you open a book, and immediately somebody in the neighbor will ask some question. So many questions, who are you, what's your name, where you people are coming from? So many questions, one after another will come. You will see that. So, Avadhut Brahman says, if there are two people, they will not peacefully read and focus on Shravanam, hearing the message of scriptures. Better to be alone. So here Bhaktivinoda Saraswati has given a very deep explanation to this. He says that amongst the jnanis, no two jnanis can sit together and, you know, talk about the message of scriptures. Why? You all have heard of Shad Darshanas, right? Shad Darshan. For example, nowadays they hold the 3-day conferences on Shad Darshan. So many big scholars and erudite scholars come there. There are a lot of vaad vivaad that goes on, argument about what the truth is. So, jnanis by nature are speculative. In fact, the meaning of the word muni means A person who thinks of his own, who does not depend on any source of knowledge, he thinks for himself, self-made master. He doesn't have any master, he is self-made master. He thinks himself. So, there are many, many munis, and every muni thinks for himself. They come up with new truth. In fact, you will not be accepted as a muni unless you have your own truth, which no one else has. Then you are called as a muni. So in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a word used, Sitadhir Muni. Bhaktas are called as Sitadhir Muni. What's the meaning of that? The muni who went round and round and round after many, many lifetimes of search after the absolute truth, they understood that God cannot be captured by my intellect. God is not below my intellect. But actually, even the soul is beyond the mind and intelligence and every ego, isn't it? What is become of God is even beyond the soul. So, God cannot be captured by the mind or by the intellect. Naya matma pravachinena labhyo na medhaya bahuna shutena tammeva unite jena labhyah. It said, God cannot be obtained even by pravachan cars. Who gives big pravachan? I am giving big pravachan now. But there is no assurance by giving pravachan you can attain God. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo. Labhyo means to attain. Na medhaya. By buddhimata you cannot capture Krishna, God. Na bahuna shutena. Even if you have heard Bhagavad Gita for 8 years, still there is no assurance. Bahuna shutena means after hearing a lot, there is no assurance that you can attain it. Then how? Tammeva pranate tena labhyaha. It is said. So by seeing the sincerity of a particular soul, God awards himself to them. He says. So, the purpose of, knowledge, when you say knowledge, it is not hearing and repeating. Knowledge is not just, reading and repeating or hearing and repeating. It is knowledge means it should actually be heard, understood, digested, practiced and realized in one's own life. So, those who sincerely practice it, then God takes note of them. And then God reveals himself to them. That's how knowledge is revealed. So, by mental speculation. So after many, many lifetimes, a muni wanders round and round. At last he comes to the point of Sitadhir Muni. With what understanding? Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudarlabha. He is called Sitadhir Muni. So, here Avadhut Brahman is talking about the general munis. He is not talking of Sitadhir Muni. He is talking about general munis unless they are alone. Because they don't agree with anyone. As soon as somebody comes, immediately there will be a big altercation, big quarrel. So it's better that they go to a forest alone. If you sometimes see pictures or movies, you find every rishi is sitting under a tree in different direction doing yoga, sitting alone. You can find that. Ashtanga yogi is doing like that. You hardly find them coming together in congregation, discussing together. So you always find them alone under different trees. Everyone has their own kamandalu. They carry their kamandalu, they carry their the stick for keeping the hand. They have their own, and they also have anger and pride also, because Lord Rudra, one of the 11 Rudras actually, he resides in the heart of mystic yogis. Like Durvasamani, in his heart resides Lord Rudra also. The anger principle, it resides also. Because by dint of their austerity. And they have their egos. They know about something about the truth, and they think they know it. You understand? So because of that, they cannot associate with others because they think they know better. Like you see, for example, Vishwamitra, he wanted to be called as Brahma Rishi, isn't it? But actually, Vasishtha never called him Brahma Rishi. Many others called him Brahma Rishi, but he wasn't satisfied. Nor did the whole world accept him as Brahma Rishi. But one day Vasishtha Muni wanted to check the humility of Vishwamitra. So when he called him to his house, he made an entrance which was shorter, so he couldn't enter very easily. So instead of bowing his big jata, you had to bow down like this and enter. Because the height was low. So do you think Vishwamitra must have bent his head down? He only bent his knee down. He bent his knee like this straight and he went. So in Vishwamitra, when he saw that, with his eyes he showed Vasishtha, you are very intelligent, you have made this. But then when he went in, Vasishtha said, you are more intelligent than me. So every muni has their own ego. But at last Vishwamitra gives up his false ego. When his daughter Menaka's daughter Shakuntala, was not accepted by Dushyant. When he comes to the court, initially he becomes very angry on Dushyant. Then he says that I will destroy Dushyant along with his kingdom. And Shakuntala is crying, "Oh, my dear father, don't do that. If you kill him, then I will marry him. We destroy everything." So Vishwamitra has actually great power. He could have destroyed Dushyant also, along with all his kingdom. But here is his daughter sobbing and weeping. She says, "You know, I want him to marry me, but I don't want you to kill him." So Vishwamitra doesn't know what to do. He is trying to explain to Dushyant. He doesn't understand. At that time, Vasishtha Muni is also sitting in the court. At that time, Vishwamitra surrenders completely. He says that, "You know, I have never surrendered to anyone in this world." But now he says, "Oh, Dushyanta, please understand. This is my daughter and you promised her. I am saluting you, I am bowing my head to you. Please kindly accept her." At that time, all the demigods showered flowers. And at that time, Vasishtha Muni accepted him as Brahma Rishi. Because actually for the jnanis and yogis to give up their false ego is the most difficult thing. Actually, even if they give up their false ego, they will never attain the true ego. Like you will find in Krishna book explanation, sometimes they become trees in the spiritual world. They are like stones, and they have a stone-like heart, they become like trees. Because they only know vairagya. Prabhupada says renunciation is not as important as developing loving attraction for Krishna. In one purport, Prabhupada writes this. Renunciation is not as important as developing loving attraction for Krishna. So out of the two, more important is developing loving attraction, which they have no knowledge of. In fact, many such yogis think bhakti yoga or bhakti yogis to be sentimentless, as even Durvasamani thought of Ambarish Maharaj. That's what they think. Bhaktivinoda Saraswati tells a story, you know. He tells about how a boy was, putting a triangle and saying A, B, C, So he was angle A is this much, angle B, he was writing all that. His mother came running. Then the professor was teaching. Mother shouted loudly into his ears, "What kind of teacher are you? Now my son is in 8th standard, you are teaching him ABC? The same old ABC? What he has been learning in LKG, UKG? You have not taught him anything better?" And the teacher was trying to explain to her, "My dear mother, wait a minute, I'll tell you what ABC he was talking about. He's talking about the triangle, ABC. But she had nothing, no sense, or she was not ready to hear. She shouted, "Get out, get out here, I will not give you the month's tuition fee, get out of here." And the professor thought it's useless to argue with her. He went away. So this story Bhaktivinoda Saraswati says, why? The jnanis, when they see the bhaktas, when they see the bhaktas chanting the holy names, repeatedly chanting the same holy name, they think bhaktas are primitive. They are dancing like sentimentalists, they are singing like sentimentalists, they are chanting some mantra. So many times jnanis mistake the bhaktas to be very immature according to their understanding. But Bhaktivinoda Saraswati tells a very beautiful purport to this. He says that when you go to the school, you learn, first you have to learn letters. Later on you learn words. Later on you learn to write prose order sentences, isn't it? Sentences you can make. And later on, when you keep on writing sentences, you write essays. Then you start writing poetry. But the beauty is, even a poetry is made up of the alphabets only. So the alphabets with which you begin, the same alphabets remain even when you write poetry. That is the beauty of bhakti process. The bhakti, the means and the end are same. So he says, in the beginning, we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, we chant. After we become Madhyamadhikari or Uttamadhikari, still we continue to chant. The same words. So jnanis may be thinking, advancement you have achieved, you are chanting the same mantra. They may be thinking. But then the chanting is not the same. The development of consciousness takes place in such a great way when one becomes a pure devotee. So, in this way, jnanis often mistake the bhaktas to be sentimentalist, but they themselves become trapped into problems of false pride and anger, like Durvasamuni, or even lust. They find that. So, that is why you will find jnanis, because of these two reasons. One is because of quarreling with other munis, they have to go to a secluded place. Another reason I said, in order to avoid the materialistic sangha and in order to avoid the, distractions. Yeah.
they go to a secluded place.
But Bhakshan Sarthi gives a nice explanation. He says, but as far as devotees are concerned, devotees are like considered like darling of Krishna. Krishna loves them so much. So devotees are not like that poverty stricken girl, but devotees are like a princess who is wearing a lot of bangles in her hand. And she comes just like a princess, and sometimes wears a lot of bangles in her hand, beautifully dressed. She comes in front of somebody who, some family who has come to see her, and she has nothing to fear, there is nothing to hide, because she is not poverty stricken. So he says devotees are like the princess, they are rich in their consciousness, and they don't have to remain single, and they like to come in each other's association. And he tells the reason why. This reason is very important for devotees to know. In Bhagavatam it is said, the whole world is all about trying to impress one another. Everyone is asking, who is bigger? Am I big or you are big? My nose is big or your nose is big? Everyone is thinking in terms of that. You know, if somebody says, you know, I know French, I know German, I know Japanese, I have an extra edge over you, I have extra feather on my cap which you don't have, you know, I have done this and you have not done that. So everyone in this world is trying to show off to one another who is bigger. You will see that. But amongst devotees there is no such quarrel. Do you know why? Because they don't glorify any mundane hero of this world. Like in South India, sometimes they would have a competition. You know, in amongst our children, they used to argue, who is big? You know, in those days there was Rajinikanth and Kamal, like two people. You know. So there will be party formed amongst children. You know. One party will say, this actor is big. You know. Another party will say, that actor is big. So this group will say, oh, he has only cheap popularity. He is not a true hero. This group will say, no, he has no mustache. He is like a female. They would say, so they will be arguing. When you take two mundane heroes of movies, you know, and you compare who is great, you know. You can go on arguing. There is no, you know. So such arguments are useless. But when you put Krishna in the center, he is such a hero with whom you cannot make any comparison of anyone. Like I was telling you, remember one of the classes, amongst all the weightlifters, you know, even in the Guinness Book of World Records, if you see, you know, they must have lifted 200 pounds or 250 pounds or something like that. But you will never see in Guinness Book, you know, somebody lifting a Govardhan Hill. You know, here. And the record of Krishna is so great that, you know, the gap between the topmost human being in this world and Krishna can never be patched up. It's never possible. Not that Krishna is slightly above, maybe this man can someday achieve that. No. The gap is so great. You know, he can never fill it up. It's impossible. He is such a hero in every respect. Like, you know, the whole world is maddened by the flower arrows sent by Kamadev. Kamadev is so powerful that he sends arrows in the hearts of men and women and he makes their heart mad and they are drowned in illusion of this world. And again repeatedly he has cheated everyone in this world. But when he goes in front of Lord Krishna to also strike him with his flower arrow, he falls unconscious in front of him. The Lord's beauty is so great, he is the Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobha. So in every respect, whether beauty or strength or knowledge or fame or renunciation, nobody can beat him in any of these things. He is outstanding. So it is said in Bhagavatam itself that the verse which says, if a group of people come together only to glorify the marvelous acts of that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, then in such a group of people there will be no envy. It is said. Actually, there can't be any envy. Why? Because there is no use of being envious. Even if you are envious of Krishna, you are not going to become like him any day. Isn't it? So instead of being envious, better you appreciate him. So it is said envy is indirect appreciation. So better you directly appreciate instead of indirectly appreciating. So it is said that is why amongst devotees, there is always the heart, all the hearts are united in glorification of that one Supreme. They can come in assembly. Like devotees have no problem in coming with other devotees because they have a common denominator, which is Krishna. So Vishnu Chakrata Thakur says, they don't have to go to a solitary place, sitting alone without anyone. So that then you, actually sometimes, you know, going to a solitary place is very nice. You know why? Sometimes people in Bombay, you know, they work hard throughout the week. And on the weekend, where they come? Lonavala. Why they come to Lonavala? Because, you know, they want a relief from the hard work of the week. They want some kind of relief. And that gives shanti also. If they come for Saturday, Sunday, you know, Sunday afternoon they'll be looking at the watch. What's the time now? I have to get back to my work now. You know, because that solitary place also becomes boring after some time. That's the nature of the fickle mind. Mind is so tricky. That, you know, you feel, if you are in Bombay, you feel I want to go to Lonavala. If you are in Lonavala, you feel I want to go to Bombay. So Prabhupada says, this is bhogatyag, he says. Like a bhogatyag pendulum. Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. When you are frustrated, you want to become renounced, renounced, renounced. When you are too much renounced, you want again enjoyment. Again go back to enjoyment, enjoyment, enjoyment. It's like a pendulum. Mind goes. There is an nature of the mind. When one becomes a devotee, one should not do enjoyment or renunciation for one's own pleasure, but for Krishna's sake, one should do. So, in this way, going to solitary place, the shanti gives some kind of relief that is certainly enjoyable, but not for a long time. So, jnanis and yogis experience the solitariness, but then you see what happened to Saubarimuni or what happened to Vishwamitra Muni. In fact, even if a devotee is alone, it is very dangerous for devotees to go alone. That's condemned by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. A devotee should never be alone. A devotee should always associate with other devotees. Like-minded people. Birds of the same feather flock together. Recently I was presenting a slideshow for a group of management corporates. I got a very beautiful idea which we have made a slideshow out of that. You know, that's very relevant to our lives. This slideshow, what it talks about is about the geese. You know geese? The geese which fly beautifully in the sky together. That is the reason why they fly together. If you carefully observe the geese flying in the sky, you will see that they make a V formation. V kind of formation. So it says, why are they flying in the V formation? Because they increase their efficiency by 71%. They increase their flying speed by 71%. Can you imagine? By flying in this V formation. If a goose is flying alone in the sky, he has to resist the wind force. But when he is flying in this V formation, you know, it's very easy. You know, they can fly very, very smoothly. They increase the speed by that. Not only that, there is one geese which is in the front which is leading. Sometimes he gets very tired. So he comes to the back of the formation. And the last geese, it goes to the front. So they also share the burden of leading the group. So they also share, like they do that. And if one of the goose gets sick and it has to leave the formation, and take some rest and then come or whatever, or it's going to die or whatever, then he's not left alone. There will be two bodyguard geese which will come along with him in a formation. They come down like this, accompanying him on either side, you know. They'll come together like this, and then they will be landing down, and then they will try to heal him, you know. And then when he gets better, then they will all fly back. Again they will join the formation. That's what they do. They have such amazing cooperation when they fly like that. So we talk so much about team building in the company, so many seminars are given on team building. Now you can see, even the birds have such a team effort, you can see that. So when you are living as devotees, in devotees' company also there are innumerable advantages of being in a devotee company. Like for example, when devotees are bound together, especially in relationship, one of the biggest advantages is it's very easy to practice together than to practice alone. Like, you know, you know the story of a father giving a bundle of sticks to sons to break. They couldn't break it because they were bound together. Similarly, sometimes in a devotee's company, one devotee is strong, one devotee is weak. Then a strong devotee gives inspiration to the weaker devotee. Later on, that strong devotee becomes weak. Then another weak devotee becomes stronger, then he gives inspiration. So by mutually nourishing one another, devotees can march in the path of spiritual life. Just like in a marathon, you see, in a marathon people run, you know. It's a long race, it's not a short, it's not a 100-meter race, you know. You have to run a long race. So sometimes when you are running like that, when you see others, you also get inspired. There are others who give you inspiration. Come on, go ahead. So we need encouragement. In fact, even the geese, when they fly in the V formation, they make a quacking sound also. So the quacking sound encourages the other geese. Why? Because all the geese, they quack, 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 they make a sound. So the geese feels that, you know, I am flying at the top of the sky. you know, such long distances, but I am not alone. Along with me there are so many others. And that gives him great confidence. In spiritual life also you will see, you gain the greatest confidence not even by seeing seniors, not by seeing juniors, but by seeing equals. People who came with you in Krishna consciousness at the same time, those people can give you the maximum inspiration. You will see that. Especially when, like for example, you know, if seniors have many big qualities, great Vaishnava qualities, and they have a lot of talent, you know, you will not be so much influenced by it. And in the same way, juniors also. But when some equals, especially in equals, you see some seriousness in them, and, you know, spirit in them, then you will also gain a lot of inspiration from them. That's why equal association is very, very important. So the quacking of the birds is like devotees encouraging one another, appreciating one another. So once Radhana Swami Maharaj was telling, devotee means they should always be appreciating one another, encouraging one another. He was telling, oh Prabhu, how you do this so wonderfully? Oh Mataji, how did you cook such a nice prasad? Oh Mataji, how did you make that garland so thick, nicely put for Radha Kunj Bihariji? Isn't it? Oh Prabhu, you gave a wonderful lecture. So he said that the Vaishnava community should be flooded with, you know, encouragement of one another, and then we all can reinforce each other's consciousness with genuine appreciation from the heart. In this way, Vaishnavas can become very strong and tenacious, and they'll get a bulletproof, maya-proof body. They will not be affected by maya. So Vaishnavas should always live together. They should not try to live alone. And that is not appreciated in the scriptures. Like, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati talks about one very famous song. Dushtamana tumi kishera Vaishnava. You know that song, what he says? Nirjana Bhajani talks about that, isn't it? Tavaharinam kevala kaitava. Why is kevala kaitava, he says? Because you are trying to go for Nirjan Bhajan, he says. So what is this Nirjan Bhajan? You know, there are some very exalted Vaishnavas called as Bhajananandi Vaishnavas. See, Bhajananandi means one who delights in constantly chanting the holy name, practically all day, like Madhavendra Puri or Haridas Thakur. Constant chanting. They never get bored with the chanting. Or they never get tired. They never worry about, you know, how many rounds are over, how many are left. No. They can go on all day, they can chant. Yeah, they have such a taste. If you go to Vrindavan, sometimes you will find there are Babajis who meditate on one pastime of Krishna dancing on Kaliya, or Krishna dancing with gopis, or Krishna you know, playing with the gopas. They just, our mother Yashoda and Krishna in a pastime of Krishna stealing butter. This one pastime just, you should hear Gaur Govind Maharaj telling this wonderful pastime of Krishna stealing butter. If you hear from them, you can understand they have really achieved that love for Krishna. So he's telling, you know, Mother Yashoda asking, she's calling Krishna and asking, hey, it seems you have stolen butter. Did you steal butter? Krishna is saying, no ma, I never stole butter. He says, but I'm seeing in your mouth there is butter here. How do you say you have not stolen? Oh, I didn't steal it. The gopis fed me. The elderly gopis, you know. If they feed me, what can I do? They have put it in my mouth. I didn't go and steal it. You know? Krishna says like that to Mother Yashoda, you know. So, but she says, no, but the gopis are coming and telling me they never gave you. You went to the houses and you stole. You know? So this is Mother Yashoda argues with her son, you know. So when you see the argument, you'll be amazed how a mother can try to convince a child with so much of conversation. Most of the mothers, they fed up and they just give a slap. You know, Krishna, while talking to Yashoda, you know, and he is going on giving arguments. You tell me, ma, you know, do you think I really must have stolen it? Just go to the houses of gopis and see how high in the rafter they have kept the butter. You know, I am so small and this is kept in the top. How can I, you know? Yashoda also thinks, yeah, what you are saying is true. And Krishna is very happy. So he is turning to his friends and smiling. And then he is looking at the mother and very serious. You know, showing his face. And, you know. So, but then Mother Yashoda again comes back and tells, you know, she tells him, Gopal, you always cheat me. Now the other gopis are telling me that you don't have the ability to climb alone. They all agree with you. But you make a pyramid. And you do a dahi handi, you know. Yeah. You climb up like that and you break like that. So at this time Gopal sees that the mother is also having one stick in the hand and she returned back. So Gopal says, Mama, I am ready to talk to you, but first thing I request you is put the stick away. Then I can argue with you. That stick is frightening me. Better you don't bring the stick. So you find very... In this way, the bhajan and the devotees, they simply sit and meditate on these wonderful pastimes. For us, these pastimes are relishable for a few minutes or moments. If you hear this for some more time, you will get tired. Prabhuji, when are you going to end the lecture? They will ask. Because these pastimes may be relishable for a short while for us. But sense gratification is more relishable to our minds in the material world. But the Krishna's pastimes are all right, no problem. But only during Tuesday program, little bit. 2 minutes. All day. You cannot be sitting in one place, closing the eyes and meditating. But none of these can do that. They can meditate like that. They're chanting all day long. So, when Prabhupada had returned to India once, he saw that some of his devotees, they are trying to imitate Haridas Thakur. And Prabhupada was very heavy in the lecture. He said, don't try to imitate Haridas Thakur. Prabhupada said. And he said, for us, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has already prescribed the process. Yare dekho tare kaho, Krishna upadesh. And Prabhupada said, I have made this temple, Krishna Balaram Mandir in Ramanareti in Vrindavan. Why? I want all the devotees from worldwide to come to this temple here and stay here, nourish their hearts and souls by singing the holy names in each other's association, get surcharged and go back to their respective places and preach and propagate Krishna consciousness. That's why I made this temple. Not that you people come to temple. And Prabhupada saw, they came to temple. They were all running away here and there to meet some Radha Kund Babaji's. Some of them went to Radha Kund, some of them went to Govardhan. Because they had heard a lot about Vrindavan from Krishna book, from Prabhupada. So they were all going here and there. So, Rupa Goswami also says, if you see, Tishtan Bhaje Tadanuragi Janana Gami Kalam Naye Dakyalamit Tipadesha Saram. That verse he says. So three things are said. What he says, one should reside in Vrindavan. And one should also remember Lord Krishna constantly. And one should follow in the footsteps of Acharyas. These three things are instructions are given by Rupa Goswami. One should reside in Vrindavan. One should always remember Krishna in the heart. And one should follow in the footsteps of great Acharyas and great devotees like Yashodamayi or Nanda Baba or Radharani and the Gopis or the Sakhas of Krishna or even the current Acharyas and the previous Acharyas. So these three instructions are given. So one day Kamaksha Maharaj came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, it seems that one should reside in Vrindavan. Is it true? Now we are gradually coming to understand. We have been going all around the world and preaching, but now we came to know that we should be residing in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada said, yes. After one has thoroughly understood all the knowledge of the scriptures, and after one has traveled to all the places in the world and thoroughly preached by extending oneself, and after one has become sufficiently mature, then one should return to Vrindavan and reside in Vrindavan. And then Prabhupada said, as far as I am concerned, I don't consider myself mature. That's why I am traveling and preaching. Prabhupada said, and Kamaksha Maharaj heard it. That was the last time they ever talked about it. No one ever talked about residing in Vrindavan after that. No. And they heard it. Prabhupada said, as far as I am concerned, I am not old, I am not mature. And another time Prabhupada said similar thing in Mayapur. So, Prabhupada was joking to all the devotees. So you all have come from worldwide, let's all just live in Mayapur happily and chant and dance. And all the devotees said, Jai Prabhupada, Hari Bol, and everyone. And then Prabhupada said, who will preach? And no one is there, so better you all go back. And then Prabhupada said like that. So in this way, Prabhupada in his conversation many times, interesting talks with Khan. One time Prabhupada said, you see, we are traveling, preaching, everything, When you become old, you should simply go to Dham, take the mala and just chant all day. And then all disciples, yes, Prabhupada. Just go to Dham and, you know, live in the Dham is the most wonderful place. No non-devotee. Everyone is a devotee. And Papa said, as far as I am concerned, I don't think I am old. I am still young. I want to preach. Similar thing. So, in this way, Prabhupada always inspired his disciples to preach and not go to Radha Konda anywhere to Govardhan and live alone in seclusion and practice Krishna consciousness alone. Prabhupada never appreciated that at all. One devotee in those days, I don't want to mention the name, he was involved in Vrindavan temple construction. He said, Prabhupada, you invited me to Vrindavan. I thought that, you know, in Vrindavan is a Chintamani Dham. You know, here when I come, I'll be able to chant more rounds of Krishna's names. Here Vrindavan is flooded with devotees chanting Radhe Radhe. But instead of chanting Radhe Radhe, I'm counting the cement bags. So he would count cement bags from morning 8 o'clock to night 9:30. And Prabhupada himself would come in between to check. So next cart load came. Prabhupada would ask, yes Prabhupada, it has come. Show me the account and he would check it. And in the night, you know, after checking how many cement bags have come and put in the godown, Prabhupada says, you locked it nicely? Prabhupada would go and check the lock. So he says, you know, Prabhupada would check the lock as if he has stored gold inside. Prabhupada would personally come to check, you know. He was totally into it, Prabhupada himself. You see, before that, devotees are complaining that cement is not coming, we couldn't finish the temple. As soon as Prabhupada came, within 2 months, all cement came. So everyone understood it's only because of Prabhupada coming, things are moving so fast, you know, like that. So this devotee was complaining to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you know, I am counting cement bags instead of counting holy names in Vrindavan. You know. And Prabhupada said, do you know that your counting of the cement bags for constructing this Krishna temple is not different from Arjuna fighting the battle of Kurukshetra for Krishna? It's the same as that. Do you think Arjuna told Krishna, Krishna, don't be riding the chariot, you turn around and stand in front of me, I want to see your beauty and meditate on you. Arjuna never said that. Arjuna said, you ride the chariot and I will go and fight. He fulfilled the order of Krishna. Similarly, now the current need is that you should construct the Vrindavan temple. Not that you are chanting Radhe Radhe. This is not a time for that. So, you can see Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada never appreciated devotees going alone for Nirjan Bhajan and becoming Babaji's in Radha Kunda. So Prabhupada would say, don't become a monkey, Markata Vairagi monkey. Markata means monkey. And Markata Vairagi means one who becomes renunciate like a monkey and lives alone for cheap popularity. Even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati writes in his books, sometimes even a so-called Vaishnava devotee may want to live alone and chant many, many rounds to win the popularity amongst the people, so that people will salute the person, bow down to the person and give him name, fame, followers and everything. So such cheap adoration is condemned by the acharyas, such living alone. Now we also should talk about the relevance of this point to the grihastha devotees, because we should not just be talking from the point of view of renunciates. Some brahmacharis in ISKCON, I know one of my good friends in another temple, he used to occasionally come to Pune also. So he got so much frustrated with city life and management and, you know, taking so much responsibility, he ran away to Vrindavan and grew long beard and became Babaji there. So one should not run away from responsibilities, especially when one is serving a guru. Under the order of the guru, one should serve. Because by running away to seclusion like that, one will not be able to last long. One will fall down. For example, Bharat Maharaj. Why Bharat Maharaj fell down? Because there was no one to tell him, Prabhu, you are developing attachment to your deer, instead of developing attachment to Krishna. There was no one to correct him. So all of us need at least one person in our life who will be bold enough to correct us when we go wrong. That's very, very important. If you don't have one, better you make friendship with someone and tell them, Prabhu, whenever I go wrong, please correct me. Whenever I doze in my chanting, please let me up. Whenever you see me, because the aeroplane deviates 1 or 2 degrees, and in the long run, it will deviate thousands of miles. So we always need somebody to correct us. So those who go to seclusion, they are in a great danger. They can fall down. The Bharat Maharaj story, Prabhupada writes this moral, that one should not live alone, one should live with devotees. But sometimes, devotees feel that when I am living in the company of devotees, I commit so many offenses. And they also find fault with me. Sometimes people, because of fault-finding nature, gradually they develop enmity with many, many devotees. First they have enmity with one devotee, then a second one, the third one. In this way, the quarrel increases. Many of us, we can see in our lives also, if you are not careful, gradually we will pick up quarrel with many devotees. Do you know which devotees pick up quarrel? Some people become self-appointed advisors. They go to every devotee and tell them what you should be doing, what you should not be doing. You correct this, you correct that. They poke their nose into everyone else's life. And then many people, you know, they may not want to be corrected by you. And they have not appointed you as their advisor. So when we do that, then the devotees become annoyed and they start keeping little distance from you. And then one day you find that as soon as you come, all people will run away from you. You wonder, what is this? You know, nobody wants to talk to me. Nobody wants to associate with me. What's the reason? Because everyone fears you. Nobody wants to come near you. Because they don't find those Vaishnava qualities in you which endear them, which endear you to them. They don't feel that. So a Vaishnava should have endearing qualities. What is endearing quality? That means the magnetic qualities which make people come rushing towards you and want to develop love and friendship with you. Every one of us should endeavor to develop such qualities. But when we become a self-appointed advisor and we always pinpoint faults in devotees, either on their face or behind their back, either way, if you do behind their back, it will come in a more ugly way, even more ugly way. So because of that, we, and also our expectations are very high from others. We think, I should always be right, I should never be wrong. I am a perfectionist. And every devotee should love me only. And everyone should think I am a hero or a heroine. I have all the godly qualities in me. Everyone should believe this. No one should even find a small fault in me. And anything that nobody should come to know the small mistakes that I commit. And everyone should think I am a perfect person. This kind of desire is there in many people. Due to which, these kind of attitudes make us very hard. And it is very difficult for us to associate with others. And if we don't take notice of this tendency at the right time, it's like a small spark of fire which will gradually grow into a huge, flagrant, blazing fire. It will burn away everything down. Similarly, I remember there was one lady who was terribly offensive. She will find fault with everyone, practically. Always she would be shouting, yelling at everyone around her. In fact, as soon as she comes, people will run for their lives. Because you beat people, they won't mind so much. But if you yell at people, they will feel like, you know, million beatings. One yelling is equal to million beatings. You know, physical pain nobody feels so much. So, because of that, people used to fear her. At last, her guru had to tell her that, you know, you cannot live with devotees, better you go to Vrindavan. Guru told her that you be in Vrindavan and constantly chant the holy names. Guru ordered her. So, you simply constantly chant the holy names. Because when one is very offensive, the only solution in this world is constant chanting. Because you are so constantly chanting that in between also you cannot tell any bad words to anybody. There is no time for that. Constantly chant. Because your mouth is like a chatterbox, you always, why do you do this? You keep talking about everyone, you know. Now you have no chance to talk because you have to chant like Haridas Thakur, you know. 192 rounds you have to chant every day. And then gradually one's offenses will gradually reduce by constant chanting of the holy name. So otherwise, sometimes we ourselves throw ourselves out of association. We pull ourselves out of association. Like one devotee was telling, nowadays I am very peaceful. He was telling, why? I have taken a house very far away from devotees so that I cannot, you know, no devotees will disturb me. You know, you come into the assembly of devotees, you know, somehow Prabhu, I don't know why these offenses come, you know. People, devotees do all politics. Then he asked him, who does politics? You are doing or they are doing? So you are doing politics and creating problem for others and blaming that they are doing politics, you are going far away from them. And they are all bunched up together. They are chanting, dancing. There may be some problems amongst devotees, but with all the problems they are thriving. They are going on. But you are like a bird in the group of geese flying together. You have come out and you want to fly alone, which is very dangerous. It's very dangerous. So one should all. So sometimes we think we are very intelligent. You know, I will always put myself the show of a gentleman, a gentle lady in front of the other devotees. So I will not talk much to them. I will not associate with them. I will not open my heart to anybody. In this way, you know, nobody will know my weaknesses and shortcomings. And in this way, you know, I can also be a Vaishnava. And whenever I go to temple, people will do one Shakalpataru based there. That will surely be available. You know, so they say they will accept me as a devotee. But in the long run, you will see you will get dried up. You will not get any nourishment in the heart. If we have this tendency, especially intellectual devotees have this problem. And many of us are intellectuals. So this problem is worthy of talking about. Because generally we want to put up a good show about ourselves in front of others. So always we put a wall around ourselves and don't reveal the real us to others. And we keep a kind of aloofness from others, which is actually very dangerous in the long run. This Guhyamakachati Prachati principle is very important. To whenever we face difficulty, to reveal to another devotee confidentially and also hear from them in confidence. So you have to have at least a handful of one or two or three devotees in whom you can put trust and they can put trust in you. And you can live in the company of devotees. And even if you had little enmity with some devotee, we should learn to forgive and forget. Chant, dance and live in the company and talk. And forget the old problems like bad dreams that happened in our life. So only then, you know, even if you have one enemy in this world, amongst Vaishnavas, we cannot go back to Godhead. Because in the spiritual world, we cannot have enmity with anybody. So we have to find out, if I have an enemy in this world, I have to change my attitude towards it. Like there was one very big landlord, Jamindar, you know. He was a very big Jamindar, Lal Babu, I think. Lal Babu. Lala Babu or Lal Babu? Lala Babu, isn't it? Lala Babu. Prabhupada writes about him, yeah. Natural devotion, Prabhupada writes. He says, you know, he became a Vaishnava in his life. And he became a mendicant. So he would go door to door to beg, you know. So he was doing that, but there was one enemy in that village for him. Except his house, he would go to all other doors. Why should I go to an enemy's door and beg, you know? You know, I'll be humiliated, you know. And after all, he's my enemy. You know, he didn't go. So his guru was not pleased with him. So he was thinking, why? I am ready to, you know, I have given up all my wealth and I have become simply a mendicant. I am ready to go house to house and beg, you know. But why my guru is not pleased? At last one day, the Chaitya guru in his heart inspired him, you know, super soul, inspired him. So he went right up to the gate of his enemy. And he was begging there. So servants came out and they saw Lala Babu was standing there. They were shocked to see that. They immediately ran inside and went and told that person, do you know who has come to your door? I asked, who is that? He said, Lala Babu was standing. Really? If he has come to my door, I will give my whole property to him. I am ready to give anything. If he is ready to become beggar and my... So he went outside and they both, they totally forgot their enmity. After that, they again became friends. So, in this way, we all have some ego reserved for, you know, in certain case, with some people we have certain, we are on an ego trip with them, you know. we have a separate corner in our heart, a dark corner, which we don't reveal to anybody. You know? I am very sure every one of us have that secret zone, you know, which you only have access, and you don't allow the key to anyone. You have locked it and kept. So Krishna will open that lock someday, either in this life or some other lifetime. our heart has to become free of all the knots. So, how can we, sometimes you know, some people who find fault with devotees, everyone practically they find. But what our Vaishnavacharyas have taught, even if there are faults, like you know, we were asking this question to Jananivas Prabhu once. He was telling, what is the population of the world, he was asking. So one of the boys said, there's 6 billion people. Out of 6 billion people in your community, how many are devotees? You know. So say you have 200 devotees. So see this ratio, 200 divided by 6 billion. What is the ratio? How much it is? Anybody knows? 1 out of, huh? Yeah. I think 0.006%. He's saying less than that. Yeah, it is such a small fraction of people. So he said, these people with whom you are living now, see, these people are exactly in line with you. See, you are wearing tilak, they are wearing tilak. You wear kantimala, they are wearing kantimala. You chant Hare Krishna, they chant Hare Krishna. You wear sari, they wear sari. You wear dhuti kurta, they wear dhuti kurta. You bow down, they also bow down. You worship Radha Krishna, they also worship Radha Krishna. You read Bhagavad Gita, they read Bhagavad Gita. Everything is same. 99.99% is same. But there is one small difference in opinion between you and them. And then you say, you are my enemy. Does it make any sense? It's real foolishness. So, what? That's why one should dissociate with materialists and associate with devotees, and both are equally important. See, Mahaprabhu gave instruction to Sanatana Goswami. First instruction, asatsanga tyag, Vaishnava achar. First thing is that you should dissociate from non-devotees. Otherwise you will be finished. Now your consciousness that you are, it's like a tender creeper now, which you are growing very carefully by watering and chanting and hearing, you know. You should put a fence around it and very carefully develop this tender plant, make it into a tree, and then it will produce the love of Godhead fruit, you know. So you should develop, and at the same time he also said, it's equally important to associate with devotees. So we will sing one particular song that talks about association of devotees, and we will conclude with that. Yeah. After the song, I'll take one question. So, what is that song?
Harihara Namakritaya.
Sevi is saying, Kandera means those people. Who are those people? Kandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sanevar. Those bhaktas who are following very carefully in the footsteps of the Six Goswamis
of Vrindavan,
and taking the dust of the feet of the Goswamis through all their five senses, making that their food in their life, for all the five senses, seeing, smelling, touching and everything. So those devotees, he says, Sandara Charana Sevi, I want to serve those people, he says. That means I want to become servant of the servant, he's saying. Bhakta Sanevas. And I want to live in the Bhakta Sanevas. Janame Janame Hoi, Eya Bilash. Birth of rebirth, this is my aspiration, he says. So Krishna's emotions and the emotions of the devotees in the spiritual world, their emotions are actually exhibited through the devotees. That's why when we associate with the devotees, only we can understand the loving sentiments of Krishna towards us. There's no other way in this world. When we are living in the company of devotees, Krishna's qualities get manifested in the devotees. So if we consider their shortcomings and weaknesses to be like pockmarks in the moon, and we appreciate the beauty of the moon, cooling nature of the moon, similarly, if you appreciate the Vaishnavas, gradually you will see our appreciation for Krishna also will develop over a period of time. So, Vidikpradesha Savita Marathar Jana Samsari, it is said, devotees like to keep away from non-devotees. At the same time, unlike the jnanis and yogis, spiritualists who go to secluded places to be away from society, devotees are not like that. Devotees like to be in the company of each other. And that is why Prabhupada writes in one place, Bhakti Yoga is so powerful. Even a man or a woman living at home, having several children, husband, wife, even they can practice Krishna consciousness and surely go back home, back to Godhead. Whereas in part of jnani, like Shankara Mat, you know, they only take people at the age of 5 years or 6 years. And then throughout the life they have to be celibate, and then they become sannyasis. Only they are given some assurance that you may achieve some emancipation or salvation. That's only Brahma Jyoti, not beyond that. You know, you can't achieve beyond that. The path of jnana and yoga are very weak. Whereas the path of bhakti is so potent that even the jnana mark and yoga mark take help of bhakti. That's why they have jnana mishrit bhakti, yoga mishrit bhakti. Bhakti is so powerful that a person living even at home, so a person can transform the home into temple. I saw a Japanese family. Any of you have seen that video? Yes, how many of you have seen? Oh, sometimes you should show it here. The Japanese family, husband is having a tough, you know. So he's going, he's a supervisor or something. He's doing carpentry work, you know. And the wife also, she's cooking and bringing. And then she's offering bhog, you know. They're eating prasadam together with the children. And the child also has a beautiful tuft, you know. Child goes to school right opposite to the house, you know. And he's playing this, what do you call it? Skipping, you know. Skipping. So I was thinking, even in India, who will have the guts to live a life like that? So there are many families worldwide. Anybody who sincerely practices Krishna consciousness in any walk of life, irrespective of whether in what ashram one is, and can go back to Godhead, but in association, everything is possible. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
He's talking of others.
Talking of others is talking. Isn't it? So, one thing is true in our spiritual life, no? All people, 90% of people are going to glorify us. There is no doubt about that. But there are certainly some people, like for me, you know, I have Gauran Prabhu, you know, who will never fear to correct me. You know. Then he comes to Pune, you know, right? Within an hour or two, he will tell me so many things. Hey, Rasham, why is it like this? You should change this, you should change that.
But there is
an administrative point. No, not an administrative point, even in personal life also. He does many things. You know, you could do this, you could do like that. So I ask about his spiritual life, he asks about my spiritual life. There are surely friends in our life who do not mind correcting. See, there is also another thing which we could highlight here. Sometimes, you know, it depends on how much depth of relationship that you strike with another person, to which that person also will strike with you. No? For example, say I can have a superficial, respectful relationship with one of you. Say when I see you from a distance, I offer obeisances. With polite palms, I say, Harikshan Prabhu, welcome Prabhu. As a, you know, proper etiquette, I show a smile on the face and I greet you. All this is very nice. No? So we can have a relationship like that with everyone practically. It's possible as a Vaishnava devotee. But if you think somebody, if you develop a genuine appreciation for some devotee, whether you're equal, a little senior, a little junior, develop a, for that matter, Narottama Thakur talks about Ramachandra, you know, who is disciple of his god brother. He develops friendship with him. Narottama Thakur. So then if you go one step forward to open up your heart to them, then people will not mind hearing you and, you know, becoming a genuine friend. See, genuine friend is not just a flatterer. You know, he is just not just a flatterer. Like Bhaktivinoda says, you know, the guru will not just flatter you, he will chastise you. Of course, a friend doesn't chastise, but at least he will politely tell you how you can make your life better if he is your genuine well-wisher. No? But that kind of relationship takes time to develop. It doesn't happen overnight. Like, you know, unless you do services together, unless you come together, you talk together, several meetings together, like you go for yatras together, picnics together, and after coming closer and closer and closer, you know, by serving together, then we become bold enough. And we don't fear to correct, we tell. Like we say, you know, the other day we were saying like this, you know, the devotee got hurt, you know. So, you see, then, also when the correction comes, how this person receives also is very important. If one becomes alarmed at the correction, you know, that is being offered, then the other person will never correct us. You know. Or if a person takes it too seriously and goes to a zone of martyrdom, you know, or self-pity, what you told me is true, I am a very fallen soul, I am good for nothing, I am not a devotee at all, I am a demon. You know. Some people go into too much of self-pity, then the other fellow will become so afraid. Guruji, if only I knew that all this will happen to you, I would have gone to only. So these two are extremes, you know. Or sometimes the people become enemies as soon as you tell their fault. You know. Like you tell, no? Prabhuji, you know, you were saying like this. You know. I'm sorry to say, you know, that's not the only way, there are many other ways also. Sorry to say, you know, you get back a minute. Then they will never correct you because they know this fellow, if you correct, so either you blow up or you go to the self-pity zone, you know. After. These are all extremes. You know. When a person corrects you, you don't consider him friend anymore. You think you are my enemy because you are finding fault in me. So these are the practical problems in opening heart in this world. For opening heart, how we should be, like for example, we all should know that we are not free from defects. We have defects. I have some defects and you have some defects. And we both are trying to become pure devotees. And I like you very much despite all your defects. Because although your defects are there, they are like pockmarks in the moon. You have so many other good qualities. The other person also feels the same. And sometimes when I tell you your defects, you will not feel bad about me. You will not think I am your enemy. You will still continue to consider me as your well-wisher. And the same is true with other person. So there are 21 aspects of trust, you know, between two friends. So these aspects, they gradually build up between friends. It takes a period of time. It takes little by little. I can tell you, in our temple, for example, I have these devotees like Sri Gurucharan Prabhu, Murari Prabhu, Ramananda Prabhu, Ramita Prabhu. With them, my relationship was so superficial. Maybe if I can say about 6 years ago or 7 years ago. At the time, you know, they would bow down, I would bow down, that's all. Vanchakalpatari, that's all. But over the years, we were put into management, the fire of management, you know. We had to manage the temple, so many problems came and everything. So we were struggling together, helping one another. And we got to see each other's colors, who you are and who I am. And there were many misunderstandings that arose. You know, we talk it out, talk about the misunderstanding. And then, you know, just like, you know, when you lift the weight, you know, when you do the weight lifting, many muscles crack, you know. That is how you can build up your stamina to lift more weight. Similarly, without coming, getting closer to devotees, and little bit of, you know, crack, crack, that the sparks will be there, it will happen.
Huh?
Friction will be there, yeah. And after the friction comes, I thought you thought about me like this, no, I told you this, no, you know. So after that, only the real love develops after that. The real love doesn't develop superficially.
No.
So unless you really get love, the devotees. But many of us prefer to be in a safe zone. I don't attack you, you don't attack me, huh? You know, then religion can never develop, you know. Isn't it? That is how we feel, right? Everyone is glorifying me. Because I glorify others and they glorify me. And we can never become better. Of course, you know, it's not that we have to go and tell everyone that false. That's not our duty. We should generally glorify everyone. But there should be a small circle of friends. See, all of you ask yourself, how many people maximum you have in your life with whom you closely work with? You will not have more than a single digit. You will see. You will certainly have a single digit number only. People whom you are very close with. Like if you take a man, for example, his wife, his children, you know, and some Vaishnavas with whom he is close, you will see that it will be mostly a single digit. It will not be more than that. You will see that. So these are the people who can be your good friends, with whom you can open your heart. You have to find out amongst them, you know, who can be your true friend. Yeah, for a man, even a wife can be a friend. For a woman, even a husband can be a friend. Because they are spiritual partners in life, you know, they are going. But one thing is, for that both of them have to come to a common agreement. Like, you know, if we delight in finding fault and criticizing and ridiculing them, then we can never help others. To be honest. That's why we need a high integrity to be friends. Both parties should have very high integrity and character. Then they will be able to genuinely talk to each other and develop true friendship. And that's why, you know, sometimes, many times people say, talk about developing relation. It is not just hanging together, you know. Simply being together, doing some prajalpa, that is not friendship. Some people think, oh, they have very good relation with everyone. No, he is simply hanging around with everyone. No. They have no relationship at all. Relationship is of the heart, not of the, simply rubbing the body doesn't make relationship at all. Train also, you are sitting next to one person, are you having a relationship? You know, between Pune to Bombay, throughout the journey you are touching your hand, leg. But then you go your way, he goes his way. There's no relationship. Relationship is of the heart. And for us to open our heart, open their hearts and get closer, it takes time. And as I told you, we should be ready to come out of this shell and come out and open. And of course, open ourselves to those people whom we trust a little bit. Now you all find out, like, you know, I used to tell the brahmacharis also, draw a circle. Center, you put your picture. And the inside most circle, the first circle, that is, you are in the center and you put the circle. Who are the people who are very dear to your heart? Find out. You know, write their names. Then you put a second circle. People who are not so close to you. You know? They are in the second level. You can put them. There may be some people who want to come to close to you, but you are running away from them. Or you are very busy. You know, you can also put them in their second circle. You know, like that. And there are some people who are far away. With some people, you have only a Haribol relationship. Haribol, that's all. You know? No, nothing more. Far away relationship. Huh? So, this is called a circle of radius, a circle of trust, it's called. Huh? Circle of trust. So you can see, so those people who are inside, they are very important for you. Huh? They can really help you in your life. And people who are outside, second circle, third circle, you try to bring them in by your good behavior, good conduct, by your by serving them, loving them, being kind to them and everything. So in this way you can increase the trust radius, we call it. The trust radius becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. Then you have more circle of devotees who trust you. Not for the sake of having a big following, saying that I am having such a big trust radius. That's not the purpose. The more people in whom you trust and they trust you, that gives a tremendous boost to the soul, nourishment to the soul to go ahead in spiritual life also. Actually, working with genuine trust is very important, at least for some people. And all of us do commit errors, and we have to forgive one another. In our ashram also, many of the managers that committed errors, I was terribly upset many times. In those days I used to get wild, you know, somebody commits errors. For a period of time I understood that not only they commit, I also commit sometimes. So I forgive, and when they forgive me, why should I should not forgive them? So we have to become mature in our heart. Emotionally we are children, that's our problem. We have to become emotionally more mature, and that will come actually as we become more and more sincere. God says, Dudamai Buddhi Yogam Tam, Yenamam Kriyapati. Then the real association can take place with devotees. That is real association. So I am very confident in everyone's life we can have a friend who can correct you. Of course, Jerebu is very exalted, nobody will correct him. But that everyone's life you will see that that can be genuine Vaishnava friends in your life who can help you. Not only correct you, even to appreciate and encourage you. Like, you know, when I am encouraged by Gaurangapu, I feel very nice. I encourage him, he encourages me, he corrects me, I correct him. It's very wonderful to have a friend like that. Because, you know, we need both. We need appreciation and encouragement. Like Gaurangapu, Gaurangapu came and we celebrated that. We had a Gauranga Sabha camp in Pune, you know. They were there whole day practically, you know, one full day. So Gaurangapu said, I just came to encourage you. You have done so much good work, so many boys are serious here. So Vaishnava life means, you know, encouraging one another, appreciating one another. And also, why we tell false? You know, Chaturdas Maharaj writes, he says, when the Lord has created this world, to reform the living entity, isn't it? But the Lord's chastisement is also mixed with his affection, he writes. Like the material world Lord has created to chastise the living entities who are rebellious. But it is mixed with his affection. How do you know that? He is giving fruits. Will you give fruits to your enemy? He is giving fruits, he is giving grains, he is giving rains, he is giving ratna, you know, gold, silver, everything. Even to those living entities. That means Lord's chastisement is mixed with his affection, he says. So in the same way, if one is my Vaishnava friend, and he commits fault, I will tell him that, you know, Prabhu, you are doing this. Now be careful, huh? Because, you know, I also face the same problem. Be careful. So you have a concern. So your correction is more of a concern than ridicule. Then the hearts open. That time only the hearts can open. I think we should stop now. We are a little late.